Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 286 featuring Andrew Price of Blender Guru and Polygon, who my dear daughter Lily is joining me today. Unfortunately, Kristen couldn't join us, so Lily's stepping up. And I should note, I would like to congratulate my daughter on getting her Junior Shodan black belt, which she achieved yesterday. Black belt in Kyokushin Karate is a big deal. Lily, Andrew Price is a YouTuber. And now you and I have been talking about this a little bit. There are different kinds of YouTubers out there. What kind of YouTubers? Give me some descriptions.
There are the gaming channel people that my brother watches a lot of. Mm-hmm. There are the like slice of life kind of relatable ones, mm-hmm, that show you everyday life and sometimes in skits. Mm-hmm. There are vloggers who show you what they're doing as they go along in their regular day. Those are the only real categories that I can think of.
Right. But then there's people like Andrew who are basically teaching you some life skills, right? Like Blender. So it's hard to find how to use Blender. And he's made, you know, something pretty big out of that with Blender Guru. He's got almost 2 million followers, like I said. So what do you think about that? Do you look at YouTube for tutorials and to teach you how to do things?
Yeah, I actually look at piano tutorials on YouTube.
Piano?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's how I learned some of the OPs.
Oh, nice. Very good.
Tutorials are a huge help, especially for me, because stuff is hard to do.
Right. That's really great. And so it's really cool to see Andrew and talk about that and how he sort of developed his own persona over time. We also talk about Polygon, which is their asset tool as well, which they sell assets and textures and models and things of that nature, and sort of come up with the idea of what is actually a useful asset to make for someone to be able to use. So it's really, really interesting to talk to him about all those things. He's also based in Australia, which is also cool because I don't usually go to Australia very often, especially now. And now that we're doing these podcasts remotely, it just makes it a lot easier. So now I'm embraced it. I'm going to do podcasts all around the world. I don't have to necessarily be anywhere. In fact, I don't know when next time I'm going to actually be able to get on a plane. So next thing is I want to get a couple of announcements. As you guys know, I've been mentioning it before, Project Lavina is in public beta. It'll still be in beta for a little bit, but you guys should check it out. It is our standalone full ray tracer. In fact, we talked about Project Lavina on the podcast itself, so I get more into it then. I'm not going to get too much into it now. In terms of V-Ray 5, V-Ray 5 for Max is out, if you guys are interested in that. And then V-Ray 5 for Maya is also available in public beta. So beta for next few weeks. So you should, if you're really interested in finding out more about V-Ray 5, this is probably a good time for you to do that. We also have collections, and collections is a big deal. Collections is a collection of all the licenses that we have. So if you use V-Ray in more than one package, or maybe you use V-Ray in Phoenix, collections might be a good deal for you guys, because we basically have all the V-Rays with the one exception of V-Ray for Katana. And then we also have V-Ray or all the Phoenixes. We have V-Ray scans. We have some cloud credits. It's a really good deal. So definitely check it out. V-Ray collections or Chaos collections. Anyway, it's on our site, chaosgroup.com. Check out all those options. Be good to have for that. And if people want to find out more about the podcast, where can they go, Lily?
If people want to find out more, they can go to facebook.com/CGGaragePodcasts or chaosgroup.com/CGGarage.
Perfect. And if you guys have any suggestions, please feel free to email us. We do listen to your suggestions. We've gotten some great ones from you in the emails. So labs@chaosgroup.com is our email if you'd like to give us some ideas. Love to hear from you. And
If anyone listens to us at Apple Podcasts, please give us a rating and a review.
Thank you. Lily, you've been a wonderful co-host. Thank you so much for doing that. But with that being said, please enjoy this amazing podcast with Mr. Andrew Price.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
But let's
get. But we will look very unprofessional. I'd be like, wow. Two tech guys couldn't figure out how to unstretch the aspect ratio.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about this. I mean, let's talk about the fact that, you know, we're both like people that have figured out, like, you know, putting podcasts out, putting video YouTubes out and doing that and reaching to a wider audience. Honestly, I didn't really know when I started this podcast if it was going to be something that people would want to listen to. Then suddenly it is, and it's great, and I'm very excited about that. But it was never my goal. I was like, I don't know, let's just try it. You've got a lot, you know, 1.3, 1.5 million subscribers on your site already.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Thanks.
And did you expect that? I mean, what was your goal? Like how did this whole thing start? How did we get to you all of a sudden becoming, you know, the Blender guru, right?
Yeah, sure. Are we recording, by the way?
Yeah, we're recording.
Yeah, this is live. Okay, we're live. This is my live response to the people. Yeah. No, how did I get started with Blender Guru? That was the question.
Yeah.
I taught myself Blender when I was like 15 in high school. Yeah. And it was just something for fun. I liked video games. I loved Need for Speed. And I wanted to make a car, I saw that car on the turntable in Need for Speed. I was like, I want to make that. And so, I just found Blender through searching for free 3D software. It was very old, very rudimentary. I think I started with like 2.1 was the version I began with, and it was a horrible experience. But I eventually achieved what I wanted to do, which was make a car. It took me like 4 years of learning to get there. And then after school, I didn't go to university. I didn't excel in school, so I was just like, literally like a laborer. Like I was breaking brick, cleaning porta potties. I was in the army reserves in Australia, just doing like sort of like run of the mill, you know, whatever. And then in the evenings, I would learn Blender. And I wanted to do, I figured like no one's going to hire me at a studio, but I could do freelancing, right? Like,
sure. Okay.
Freelancing, there's gigs just sort of thrown out here and there. And I thought if I made a tutorial, then maybe somebody would want to hire me. So that was where the idea came from to make tutorials. And it worked. Like I made a smoke simulation tutorial, and then like Bridgestone Tires wanted me to do a commercial. And that's the only freelance job I've ever done. It was my first and only. It was a terrible experience. I hated it because I realized like this is the first time I'm doing what I love, but I'm doing something that somebody else wants me to do. And it's not fun anymore. It's not creative. It's not, you know, I was
interesting.
Yeah, the whole enjoyment I got out of it was like I'm just doing, scratching an itch, doing something, and then it was just like it wasn't fun. But coincidentally,
you're scratching someone else's itch, though.
Scratching someone else's itch, which didn't necessarily satisfy
that's
me.
That's not sexy.
No, that's right. It's a little odd. That same year, I went to the Blender Conference, 2009 Blender Conference in Amsterdam, and Ton Roosendaal, the founder of Blender, stepped up and said, you know, there's a big demand for training. A lot of companies want to learn and schools, they want to learn Blender and no one's making training. And I was like, all right, well, I'll just keep doing the tutorial thing. And so I think I made a product, my first ever product. It was called The Wow Factor. It was an ebook. And that was enough to replace my income at the time. So it was a very successful little ebook. And so I quit my job. I think I was a debt collector. It was my last job. I was a debt collector. Yeah, for Toyota Finance.
Nice.
Yeah, not actually knocking on the door, but like calling them up and saying, like,
"Oh wow,
you got to pay your bills."
Yeah,
but that was my last.
You were the repo man.
Yeah, I mean, I was the guy before the repo man. I was like,
okay,
1 to 45 days in arrears, I was the guy to call up and say, like, if you go over 45 days, then it goes to the repo guys. So,
right.
But that was nice. That was a fun job. I learned a lot there.
Yeah.
But it was my last ever job. Ever since then, I've been self-employed working on Blender Guru. And the last 4 years, we started a separate website called Polygon, which is textures, models.
I want to talk to you about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's going really well. That's now we hire about 20 people globally to create the assets for it, develop the website, etc. And yeah, that's my story.
Well, I love that whole thing, because I think there's a lot of people out there that has found a niche and found a way to take what they do and not necessarily be driven down by the grind of what they're doing. And they realize, you know, like when I was in, when I went to architecture, I realized I loved doing visualization, and I was a really good designer too. But then I realized, like, I actually didn't care if the building got built or not. And so,
yeah, right.
Like, you know, I don't care.
Yeah.
It was more about the funness of making the image. And then I realized, like, well, that's why I need to go into visual effects and do that. So that became the thing that became good for me. And I love the fact that you're like, I don't want to actually do CG for someone else. I love the act of doing this. So why Blender? And don't tell me because it was free.
It was free.
It's free, right?
That's what I think I tried two or three. This was, 2003 back then.
Right.
There was something else called Animator with an 8 in the title. I think I tried that. And then I saw a red sports car. And it was hosted on a website called Blender.org. And I went to that website and I was like, oh, you could make that car with this weird software. And that was the one I started with. And it just, I stuck with it.
Right. Well, okay. So Blender is an interesting thing. And right now it's getting obviously a lot of attention. Blender is, you know what? I know a lot of, like, 90% of my audience knows what Blender is.
Okay.
Let's pretend there's 10% that doesn't understand Blender. So, like, let's put that in perspective for people that don't know that.
Yeah, the 10% is out there that don't know what Blender is. It's a little fledgling open source 3D software package that for the first 10 years that I was using it was the butt of the joke of, you know, it was the worst of all the packages, right? It was worse, even worse than Lightwave, you know, the one that nobody was using. It was terrible, right? Because of the interface. The interface was shocking. It was so backwards. Even the most basic thing of selecting an object was right click, not left click. It was right click. Just weird little things, little quirks. And it was seen as like this little tool that like nerds use. They were like techie developers and they were so like stubborn in like, we're going to do things our way, right? And thankfully Blender, they lost that. They realized that there is value in making it more accessible to everything else. So now it is like, it's done a 180. Like the website is like, it's like, it entices you. It's got the images. It's the features. Now they're doing like feature release videos. They completely redid the interface twice. The latest version is outstanding. And now because of it, Unreal Engine now supports us as like an Epic mega grant. NVIDIA, AMD, Intel, Ubisoft. They're all becoming like giant, basically investors in Blender.
But it's an open source software. So is it a company?
Yeah, like, so there's...
So Max is owned by Autodesk and hires a bunch of employees to make Max, right? So how does Blender work?
Good
as
question.
As an open source software.
Yes, exactly. And that is a very good question. And, you know, from the volunteer side of things, it's similar to like Wikipedia. Like, who cares to, you know, type out an article for free? You're not getting paid, right? There's an intrinsic motivation to be part of a community and to give something of value to other people. Doesn't make sense to a lot of people. If you're, you know, clocking everything by the hour, you're charging clients and things, you're thinking like, who are these developers that are giving up their time? So I mean, a lot of it is sort of like love of the idea of making free stuff for a community of people who love it. And especially in the early days, it was almost entirely voluntary. Nowadays, there's a Blender Development Fund. So if you go to, actually, I won't give out the URL because I can't recall it, but there's a Blender Development Fund. And I think it's in the millions per year in terms of income. So you subscribe for like $10 a month or something like that, knowing that that's going to go to the Blender Foundation or the Blender Institute. I get them confused. And they will hire a team of developers to build new features, maintain old features, reduce bugs, etc. So it's like a voluntary subscription system. It's kind of, I was thinking this the other day, like you could try and replicate Blender's success and probably fail. I don't know the specific reasons why Blender
Linux
has succeeded.
Linux does the same thing.
Linux is another one, yep. But there's also like GIMP is horrible. It's nowhere near as successful. Krita. Nope. There's so many open source projects that just go nowhere. I don't know the secret sauce that Blender had, but somehow the community was just, it in its early days, was just so instrumental in getting it off the ground to the point that now it's, yeah, they're getting all this funding and people are supporting it. But yeah, in its early days, it was just all voluntary, right?
Right. Right. And I think this is very interesting specifically because I think there's obviously some rebellion about certain ideas of where the software is going and how much it costs, right? And giving more software to power to the people who want to use it is a very interesting idea as well. I'm just sort of curious about the whole thing. So you found this software. You're like, you know, in the early days of it, you're like, you know, through all its wonkiness, it's like, I'm just going to learn this because, and that's actually a good thing. If you learn it and you have no other reference of anything else, then that's the best thing to learn, right? Mm-hmm. And you keep going with it. So that was sort of your niche. And you're like, oh, well, this is fun. I'm going to make a tutorial about this and tutorial about that, which was a great idea, by the way. I did my first V-Ray tutorial for Gnomon DVDs way back in the day when people still watched DVDs on how to train people.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I did that way back when. And that's a powerful thing. What was interesting to me is that, you know, a lot of people who are really good at software, they're like, I'm going to teach someone something very niche. You created probably the pinnacle starter video. Like if you want to learn Blender and you know nothing at all, here's how to start. That's the donut video, right?
Yes, the donut video. Yeah. That was an interesting one. Like I'd been told, because like I'd been running the channel for like 10 years at this point. I never did a beginner video.
Right.
Everything was aimed at intermediate to advanced because that's where I was and that's what I thought was interesting. Right?
Yes, but the problem is there's like a bazillion people who've never touched a software
exactly.
And I need something to start with.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so I put together this idea of like, I think I had, because you have to have something enticing that people would want to create in order to start the journey, right? And right. So I had these ideas of like something basic, like a snowman. You could make a snowman. You could make a chair. You could make a cup. And I was trying to think of like, what's something? And then I had a donut and I asked my wife, I showed her like these four images. I'm like, pick one. Which one would you want on this? She's like, the donut. I want to make the donut. I'm like, all right, it's the donut. And then started recording it. I had to go to the Blender conference in Amsterdam that year. So it was like, I had like a week to record this thing. I got a cold halfway through it. So my voice got a little raspy towards the end. And I just uploaded it thinking like, all right, it's a beginner video, you know, and it became by far like the biggest thing I'd ever done. It's like 90% of the views from that video, basically. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. And I recently
redid
it.
Because 90% of the people are beginners.
Exactly. I mean, it makes sense. It's like the funnel, right? It's like huge at the top. And then it goes down. And of course, the people that are the intermediate to advanced users are like the tippity tip of the bottom of the pyramid. The biggest part is beginners.
So show me how to click on an object.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's really cool. And the thing is, you know, I've watched a couple of your videos and what's interesting is like you figured it out like in a lot of great ways. Like, you know, right now you have a green screen behind you. You cut yourself out. You put yourself in there. You're like, you did it. Like you've got the same attitude. We're seeing a lot of people in the Twitch area and those things are like, let me show you something cool. Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to showing you, you know, Fortnite, I'm going to show you how to do Blender. right? And that's really, really great. I think it's a really great attitude to have and a really good resource for people. People gravitate towards that. And especially now, you know, that's another a friend of mine who I've met in person at different conferences, which I don't know when conferences are coming back anytime soon. But the fact is, he told me, and he's actually in Australia as well, and he was telling me, it's like, well, I love the fact that everyone is forced to do these webinars because now I can just go to all these things without leaving my house. Right. So I can learn all this information from the internet and do that in a great way. And so what you're doing is you're doing that exact same thing. Right. Did you find it weird when like, did you find it like how many years have you done this? Like 10 years, you said?
No, so I started in like 2007. I mean, so the channel's been going at least 13 years.
So did you find that you sort of developed that personality as you go?
Yeah. I actually did a presentation at the Google Sydney headquarters recently talking exactly about that. Like how something no one talks about in the YouTube or anything community is like when you start doing videos or speaking or anything, you don't know what your voice is yet, right?
Right.
You have an idea of how should I sound on a microphone? And so when I started, I was super scared and it was literally like this. Hey guys, and my name is Andrew Price and I'm gonna be showing you how to make some grass in Blender today. That was like, I think that was the first, first video I made was on like a car tire or something, but it was like that, the whole video. I was so nervous. And then I think I went to this sales webinar, like how to sell things online. And it was by this hyped up dude who was like, yeah, you know, and like, hey, you gotta talk like this. So it had like this radio voice. And I'm like, I gotta talk like that. So then I came out of the gate and it was like, hey guys, Andrew Price here from BlenderGuru.com. You know, and it was, everything was hyped
too
up.
Too salesy?
pointless energy. Energy is good when it has a purpose and it's authentic. But it's easy to tell when somebody is putting it on and it feels inauthentic. Maybe kids can't tell because evidently every Fortnite video is like that. It's like 10 minutes of screaming. And then you watch it as an adult and you're like, can't you tell this guy is just the worst performer? You know? So enthusiasm is good, but it has to be authentic. And so anyway, I dropped that radio voice over the years and just started being normal, just sort of talking how I would talk normally and just being comfortable. And you never get fully comfortable as well. Like if anyone's thinking of starting a YouTube channel, like every time you hit record, there's a little bit of like nervous jitter of like, what am I going to say? And so, and you just screw it up and you have to like stop the recording and re-record it. And, you know, and, but what I've learned is the more, if you know everything you have to explain in the video, like the back of your hand, that always results in a better tutorial. Like if you've just made the thing once before and now you go, all right, hit record, let's go. All right, so what was the first step? This one. Okay, so do this and then, I forgot that other thing. And it you end up flubbing it and it becomes longer than it needs to be. You forget something as well. And then you have to go like and put something
and
in.
And just confuse the viewer too.
So I rehearse everything that I teach about 10 times, which sounds crazy to people. They're like, so like if I'm making a tutorial on like how to make a tree, I'll probably make that tree 10 times before I actually hit record, which sounds insane, but there's so many little things. And like also when you remake something and you do it again and again, you realize the first way I did it was the wrong way. Like if I made the tree, like I spent way too long making the little twigs and they make it longer in a render time than it needs to be anyway. I just remove the twigs, you know, or like, and so every time you make it, it's better than the last. And so by the time you've finished it, you've learned by far the best way to make it. And you also know all the settings, what they do and how to explain them. And at that point, because you know everything, you can be natural in front of the camera and you can just kind of relax. You can throw in jokes without like losing your train of thought. So that's what I aim for now.
Okay. But before you even get to that point, you just said making a tree, right?
Yeah.
How do you even come, like, if you're doing a tutorial, you're like, what's the thing that's like, I'm going to make a tree or I'm going to make a donut.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What's that thing? Like, because a lot of people don't know how to start that. Like, hey, I'm going to show you something.
Yes.
What is this?
Yeah. So like choosing the subject, right? Like how do you choose exactly? So that's the thing at the start
that
before
seems
you
harder.
Start the tutorial. It's not necessarily harder, but it is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And so spending time deciding, like I mentioned before I made the donut, I made like four or five different ideas for it. And I asked my wife what she wanted because that is the most important thing. The rest of it is a lot of work, but if you started with something that people don't even care about or don't want to make, then it's going to fail or it's going to get less views or, you know, whatever. So like, for example, I'm thinking of making a game asset course, like how to make a game asset, right? And basically, I want to show someone how to make something in Blender, how to model it, then how to texture it, and then how to bring that into Unreal or Unity. Mm-hmm. And so that's the idea for it. But what should the subject be? And so I'll open up an Evernote file and I'll type out just ideas. Like a wooden barrel, right? Is that interesting? Maybe. It's not very sexy. It's not. It's a wooden barrel. An ammo crate, that's a little bit better. It's more gamey. It's got more grunge. It's a little more, I don't know, masculine. There's something to it. But I don't know. It's also a little eh. And then you just like list out a bunch of ideas. And I think I did one. Nowadays, I think I even throw a poll up on Twitter. But I think I asked it on a live stream and got some responses. But like a lamp would be the best one. Everyone was most excited about this oil lamp idea. So that's probably what I'll do that tutorial on is how to make a metal oil lamp. But yeah, like it applies not just to tutorials, but like models. Like if you go to a model marketplace, there's so much effort put into objects which nobody needs, or at least very few people need. Like say, for example, a spaceship sounds like a good idea for a model. And yet, when you think about who would
there's
be buying a spaceship.
There's so many variations of spaceships, though.
There's so many variations. And that's the other thing, is it's like, it's so integral to the design of the movie that this, you know, like the next, I don't know, Iron Man, if there is one, and they need to have a spaceship, they're not going to go to something on Turbo Squid to buy it because they're going to have an art department that needs to fit a structured thing.
Yes.
A spaceship is probably the worst thing to offer on a site because it's only going to be bought by maybe like those run-of-the-mill mobile games developed, mass-produced, just intended to fill it with enough objects that it looks like a game.
Park bench is good.
Yes, park bench, because everybody needs a park bench and they generally look the same, right? Like that's something that's way better than a spaceship. I think also like, I think there was a post on CG. What's the name of that model site? It's not Turbo Squid, CG.
Network? No.
No, CG. Oh, it's going to bug me now. It's a big one, and they'll be bummed that I don't mention them.
CG Trader.
CG Trader, yes. They put out a blog post years ago. It was like an infographic that it showed what the top searches were on the website and how many models were in that category already. So, like furniture, for
opportunity
example.
Cost, right?
Yeah. But furniture is something a lot of people need, but there's so much furniture that it's actually hard to beat the competition. So it pointed out some key categories, and I remember it was like animals. That's something that's very hard to do. A lot of VFX, a lot of adverts, they all want digital animals for some reason, movies, etc. Like that's something that there's very few of them. You could charge a high price and there's a demand for it. So that was a category that, for example, if you spend, you know, a year making loads of spaceship models, that'd be a year spent making models. But if you spent that same year making two animal models that's rigged
squirrels.
And animated.
Yeah,
exactly. You would probably earn significantly more, maybe 10 to 20X. I have no idea. But that kind of thinking Like, what are you making it for? Who is the customer? That, what's the problem you're solving is really crucial.
Well, the thing I think is interesting, especially when you deal with super high-end people. Like, I remember, when I did my V-Ray DVDs way back in the day. I'm talking 2005, 2006, right? So it was like, it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it was like how to do GI. Like, uh-huh. really, like, understand. And I made two DVDs, GI for exteriors, GI for interiors. And that was back when those things were different. Now they're all the same.
But, okay.
Nice. But anyway, I did those. And then Noman was like, no one's going to buy that. And it turned out it was, like, the number one selling DVD. Like, everyone wanted to know about that stuff, right?
Really?
And it was like, you know, more people buy How to Learn Maya than how to do extra special compositing stuff, right? Huh. And so because I was a very, I had a very successful DVD, they asked me to start recruiting people, like, hey, bring some other people to do some DVDs. And specifically at the time, they wanted to know about people learning Nuke. This is when Nuke was just becoming a public product. It had been an internal product at Digital Domain for a long time, and then it just became, and I was like, they need people to learn Nuke. And so I went to Digital Domain and asked a top Nuke artist, like, you should train people on a Noman DVD on how to use Nuke. And they were like, sure, and I'll explain to them how to use color space. I was like, whoa. Start with how to put a node down.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Yeah.
And they're like, but that's easy. It's like, yeah, but no one knows that.
Yeah.
And there's so a million people that want to know that.
Yeah.
And finding a way to do that. And they'll eventually get to the other courses, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like it's like when I went to university, right? Like people I was a math major, right? So people in the first year of calculus, there was a lot of them. But people in the, you know, advanced algebra, knot theory and topology, there was like six people in that class, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So you got to learn to find that audience. And I think there's a huge thing, especially with Blender being such a, you know, an open source software, it is accessible to anyone with a computer, really. Mm. And I think that's the thing that's really kind of amazing about it is like, here's something that anyone can start on. And I think that's really kind of cool. And you found that niche and you found that audience and you found your voice. So that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, Blender's, I mean, when you think about it, it's really kind of special that there's this free software that can literally create the special effects, the animations that, I mean, because it is being used in the industry. It's industry standard and it costs nothing. And the people that are earning enough income, like myself, are supporting the Blender Foundation so that they are earning enough money to hire their developers.
Right.
But the people who are beginners and they're 14 years old and they live in Nigeria, they are learning and teaching themselves a life skill that they can actually get employed with for $0. Right. It's insane. It's really cool.
Well, more importantly, like, you know, when I was a student, it's $0 legally. Right?
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of people that are out there, right? There's a lot of people out there that would rip off and crack software. Like, crack software was like the thing to do when you're like, what do you mean you paid for that software? It's all cracked. It's like, but this is legitimately free. And there was a time, you know, where people were using cracked software. It's like, well, it doesn't matter if it's cracked because ultimately when they get a real job, they'll pay for that software, right? Mm-hmm. With Blender, it's free even when you're working in a real job, which is actually a different attitude. So I think it's an interesting idea, really interesting idea of where that concept is going for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, have you noticed a trend in the last few years where that interest level has risen? Know, I'm sure the curve has always gone up, right?
Yeah.
But have you noticed the steepness of that curve change?
Yes, definitely. Especially with 2.8 that came out basically a year ago. It was like every day there was a news story of like a new studio has adopted Blender. And I was getting emails from everywhere of people that wanted me to come and do training in their studio. Funnily enough, I got asked by, here in Australia, in Queensland, I got asked by the Queensland Police Force. I also got asked by the Army and the prison. And okay. I actually did the prison one. So I went to a maximum security prison and I taught prisoners how to use Blender. Something I haven't told before, but it was basically this program that they were running at the prison to teach people life skills, and they were using Blender. And right. I just so happened to live like 30 minutes from the prison. And they're like, do you want to come and show the prison? I was like, I've never been in a prison. That sounds really interesting. I'll give it a shot. And okay. so you go in there and it's like dudes with tats and they're just like, they're on the worst machines possible, by the way, in like a shed that's like, they turn the lights off so it doesn't get too hot. So it's dark, it's dingy, and it was hot, and we're all sweating, and the computers are whirring away in the thing, and I'm just like pointing at, you know, the screen and like, you got to make the donut like this, you know. It was, right. But the people were so nice. Like, they were not what you imagine. You know, you see in the movies, they're all like hardcore, like, you know. There was a couple of guys like that, but like, they're all just like really nice, soft-spoken, and I just wanted to ask them, like, what are you in here for, man? Because you sound so nice, and yet you just told me you're here for life. What you do? But you can't ask that, you know?
Right.
But that was fun. Anyways, no, so going back to your question, yeah, there was a point, yeah, last year when 2.8 came out, it was like every studio, every company around the world got the memo, we should start using Blender. And yeah, it just shot up from there. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting. And I think there's obviously going to be a response. And I actually think that the world needs a little bit of a shakeup in terms of where some of the, because things have gotten a little stagnant, honestly speaking, in terms mm-hmm. of the 3D world. I use a lot of different 3D software, a lot of different 2D software and everything else. So
some softwares that you think are innovating like you would hope?
Innovating?
Yeah, like doing some things differently.
Well, you know, Houdini's doing some pretty amazing yep. stuff. So the side effects guys are doing some really cool stuff in terms of what's going on. I actually think the SketchUp guys are doing some pretty interesting things as well.
SketchUp? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's owned by Trimble, right?
Trimble, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
That's an interesting one, because I think SketchUp might have started as open source.
Yeah, I don't know if it started as open source. Bought by Google, and then Google sold it to Trimble. Yeah.
Sold it to Trimble, right.
Yeah.
I think Google bought it from Trimble because they wanted it to be part of Google Maps. That's really my suspicion. So there was a point where Google Maps started to add 3D assets, and you're using SketchUp to sort of make those things.
Oh,
somehow
interesting.
It was, that's my suspicion.
And then they lost the interest and sold it to Trimble?
Well, then I was like, well, it served its purpose, and we have different ways of doing these things, so we just sold it. And Trimble, I think Trimble's doing a fantastic job with SketchUp.
Right.
I actually think they're putting a lot of interest in it. So I think that's and they do offer a free version of it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, there's a lot of interesting things that's going on in terms of the creation tool set. Now, how... The problem it's always been, especially with 3D software, is that it's very hard to make it approachable,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you present someone's like, I love CG stuff and I want to make my own CG stuff, and you present them with an interface of Max or Blender or Houdini, right? Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. being like, ah. I don't know mm-hmm. what to do with this, right? It's like, yep. you know, saying, I want to fly planes, and like, all right, I'm going to sit you down in the cockpit of an F-16 and then you tell me, you know, show you how to fly it. And like, it's just scary, right?
Yeah.
Overwhelming.
Yep.
So do you think that's going to change, where it's going to be like, just start to point and click? Because SketchUp has figured that out a little bit. They just,
yeah,
you can make things
right.
in SketchUp pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
Without knowing much.
I hope so. In fact, there's even been this idea to they called it Blender 101, which was an idea of having a simplified version of Blender, which you give to complete beginners, especially kids, which has basically the advanced stuff just sort of taken away.
Mm-hmm.
I would like, I kind of look at like, Have you ever been and played an old arcade game from like the 80s and 90s today? Have you like been to one of those old arcade things?
Uh-huh.
Those games are so punishing.
They are very hard.
And the idea that you would put a coin in and then the game says start and you go, what am I doing? And you just go, and then the thing goes, and it goes game over. And I go, what? Right. I don't even know what I'm doing, right?
Right.
Because it was the early days of video games, it was the Wild West. They didn't know how to engage someone, how to feed them just enough challenge to keep them interested. Nowadays, if you open up a free mobile game, they give you hit go. There's one button. It says go. And then there's like a little man running and you're like, what's going on? And then it says swipe left to, you know, avoid the obstacle. And you swipe left and he jumps left. And then it goes swipe up to jump over the log and you swipe up. And it gives you the tutorial as you play the game.
Right.
And it doesn't give it to you in like a screen like the old video games where it would just go like instructions and go left, right, up. And you have to like remember it. It gives it to you in just enough so that you can digest it. And then the best games like Angry Birds, Plant vs. Zombies, there's a few that are used as examples of they're good at keeping you have to stay in this perpetual state of just enough challenge that it's interesting and not falls into boring, but not too much challenge that it's punishing and you quit. And the best games like refine it over the years and see where players drop and where they continue and get it just at that level perfectly enough. And I think that's probably, hopefully, maybe where 3D software could go in the future. Right?
Just give you the very basic thing. And as you get really good at it, it unlocks different levels of the interface.
Which sounds crazy. Like a video game amazing. And the software. But I could imagine like, could I ever get my wife involved in 3D? Probably not. Not right now. She tried Blender. She tried watching my donut tutorial series and she quit. I was like, shame on you. How dare you? But maybe she's just not interested in that. I mean, yeah, maybe. But I would imagine like if she was to put on like some VR goggles and there was like some controllers and then it was like, I don't know what to do. And then there was like blocks and it's like move the blocks. Well, like maybe there's like a house and you're like moving furniture and it's like move the furniture to position the thing. You're like click this to grab it and you move it and you go like, oh, this is kind of fun. And then it's like, I don't know, like there's a piece of like a ball of clay and it's like pull it to make it thing. And you go, ooh, and then there's like a stretch and then there's a move and then and you're like, oh, this is kind of fun. That would be an interesting way to get somebody into 3D, almost like a game. Yeah, kind of like there's Minecraft and then there's that new one, Dreams. Is that what it's called? PS4. Yeah. That is apparently, I haven't played it, but I've heard it's, it allows you to non-3D users to design levels and worlds, basically pulling in more, like kit bashing, basically, without any 3D experience. So I would say maybe that's probably the future of 3D. I would hope, but yeah.
If the emphasis is on creating and less on dealing with weird interface anomalies, then it would be great, you know?
Yeah.
It's like when I learned 3D, I was learning it on Wavefront on an SGI machine and you had to type in code to move things. And it was like, it was amazing. Like I remember I actually made with a series of spheres and cylinders, I made a spider that could move. The fact that I was able to accomplish that at all was incredible because like I had to type in the code to do that with no manuals. Like I had to figure it out on my own. It was so hard. And the fact that now you can do so much more with so much better ideas and it's like, yeah, it's just much more intuitive.
Whoa.
But it's true. You know, when you buy your phone, there's no manual that comes with your phone.
No, that's right. That's right.
You just start it.
Yeah.
And then you learn it as you go and then it becomes intuitive as you go.
Yeah. Right?
So it gives you that tutorial,
that walkthrough, like, hello, what's your name? Right. That kind of thing. Yeah.
To put things in here, swipe here to do that. And it's very much makes sense. Like when I got my first video games, yes, video games had a manual with them, which is kind of insane to think about.
It is. I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Every game came with a manual. And yet now you look at it and go, what were they doing? But like maybe that's today's 3D software. We'll look at the way that we do it now. You just dump people into this interface with controls and buttons and translate and X, Y, Z, and you just go for it, you know? Maybe we'll look at that and go, like, what were they doing? You know? How dare you give people this trial by fire, you know?
Well, that's interesting because now it brings up the point, right? So if that exists, then what becomes of, you know, Blender Guru, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because then people don't need the donut tutorial. The donut tutorial is built into the interface.
Yeah, which is a good thing. That would be great. If the software taught the user how to do stuff, that would be great. Because you could fight it all you want and go like, oh no, it's not, you know. But you could also just accept that what you're teaching somebody is that they don't want to learn something. I mean, they aren't going there to learn from you. They are going there because they have a goal in mind. They want to make a flower or they want to make a character, and you are a stepping stone to that thing. So the faster they can get there, the better. So if the software can teach them how to make the character by themselves, well then, fantastic, you don't need me. I think that's pretty far away, and maybe I would have given up tutorials in 40 years by then anyway. I don't know how long it would take, but you know.
Well, I don't necessarily, it's kind of a leading question because I don't necessarily think that's the case, right? You've already created yourself as a personality in the Blender community, right? So the fact is that people play Fortnite and then they watch videos of people playing Fortnite as well.
Yes. Yeah, right? That's true.
So you're going to like, hey, I did this. Like, oh, that's a great idea. You know, I love what Andrew did on this. It's like, I'm going to use that next time. That's a great tip, Andrew. You know, even seasoned people will be able to do that and gain that thing. And so I think that the software community needs to give people the donut tutorial as they go.
Yeah.
But I also think that people that are influencers in that community also have a role to play. So that's what basically I'm getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would love it to get to a point where there's less of a need for the technical side. I don't see the technical side really ever disappearing, but like, I look at the concept art world today and how they've basically fully transitioned to 3D, right? What used to be all paint and all that kind of thing, they're now doing in 3D. And the way they use 3D software is different to 3D users, right? Because they're dropping in stuff, they're moving the camera around, they're framing things.
Well, they
got
to move at lightning speed.
Exactly. Yeah. They go so fast and they're like kit bashing. And it's like, bam, bam, bam. That's where I actually see the future of tutorials, because it's like knowing how to make an interesting visual image with, you know, good design, good shape language, all that kind of stuff. That's actually the fun stuff. That's the stuff people want to know. The stuff about what's X, Y, Z and what does this checkbox do? That's like, it's like nails on a chalkboard that you need to learn currently, but it'll be great if you didn't have to in the future.
Right.
Like PBR workflow is a great step in that direction, like real-time rendering, because it does truly become like, you know, I'm just going to click, make this material red, and I'll let the software figure out the Fresnel and the reflection and all that kind of stuff by itself.
Right.
So it's getting there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That totally makes sense. Totally makes sense.
By the way, I got to ask you, I saw the other day V-Ray's got like a real-time something on the way, a race racing. What's it called?
Lavina.
Lavina. How long has that been? Like, that's in beta?
It's in public beta now. We've been working on it for several years, but it is a real-time ray tracer, and not, it is 100% ray traced, meaning there's no rasterization.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And so is it using the Monte Carlo method of, and then is it like AI denoising it? How does it work? I just saw it the other day. I was like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. It's, well, first of all, when you do 100% ray tracing, you don't have to load anything into a rasterized format. So a lot of the quote unquote real time ray tracers are basically a rasterizer with ray tracing on top of it, which is what it used to be way back in the day, right?
Okay.
So it's like, it's a rasterizer and then I need some reflections that look ray traced, right? So that's the thing. So now we don't do that anymore. So what we do for V-Ray is it's 100%. So everything is ray traced. The diffuse light, everything's ray traced. We use real GI. We use everything. And when you do that, it kind of opens a door to a couple of things. It basically means we can have huge amounts of polygons. So we've rendered things with billions of polygons on a regular card, which is a pretty nice thing. Whoa. And it is...
Wait, how does that make it different to current offline renderers? Why can you not use billions of polygons currently?
You can.
Okay.
You can.
Oh,
you can,
okay.
If you do it with ray tracing, with pure ray tracing. What's interesting is like...
versus, okay, like ray rasterization. Okay, got it.
Right. So what's in rasterization, resolution is free, but in ray tracing, polygons are free.
Right. Got it.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
So does that give you an idea? So if you go high resolution, then it slows down, right? But if you get, if we can basically do a really good, you know, HD is fine. HD is fine on our current cards. It's also it's also based on the new RTX technology. So it's basically all RTX. But yeah, it's really great. It's a pretty cool thing. And basically
is it using denoising, you know, like viewport denoising? You can do that?
Yeah, we have our own denoiser. And you can turn it off and on. Yep.
So how does it, is it starting with that grainy image to throw the light around and then it's like smoothing it in real time? Or how is it doing?
Yes.
Okay, so it's doing that. Right.
But it's not that grainy.
Really?
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
In fact, some people turn off the denoiser because they like the little bit of grain that's in
there. Yeah, okay. Wow, that's cool. Isn't it interesting that the gaming world and the offline world are converging to this point true real-time ray tracing, but they're going at different approaches. It's like, I don't know which one will win out.
Well, here's the thing, and I've used this analogy with Vlado a few times, is like, will real-time rendering replace offline rendering? Yes, absolutely. Everything will be real-time.
Uh-huh.
Will rasterized rendering replace ray tracing? No, absolutely not. Ray tracing is the goal. Pure ray tracing is the
goal. Right, got it.
So what you're looking at when you're doing the rasterized plus ray tracing thing that's going on in a lot of the games that are going on now, that's what we were doing in the movies back in the early 2000s, right? Because like we couldn't fully ray trace, it was too slow. But now, everyone fully ray traces offline because rasterization just doesn't look real. Ray tracing is what's going to make it look real. Mm-hmm. So eventually everything is going to be fully ray traced. So that's what Chaos Group's idea is, like, well, we're going to get into the real time game. We're going full ray tracing 100% no matter what. So
does Chaos Group see Unreal Engine as a competitor?
No, because I don't see it as a competitor. I see Unreal Engine as a platform.
Okay.
Right? So Unreal is a platform that we could, because we make V-Ray for Unreal.
Right. That's what I was, you've got like a partnership.
The platform that Unreal has is what I'm interested in. I want to render in V-Ray when I'm in Unreal. Right.
Okay.
Now, Unreal has a really great real-time renderer. I'm not dismissing the quality of that, but it's not a full ray tracer, and I still need a full ray tracer. So I want to use Unreal to do a lot of the stuff I want to do, but then I also want it to look like it was fully ray traced.
Interesting. So
does that make sense?
Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah. It's like
I didn't expect you to start asking me all these questions. But
no, it's so good. I'm just curious. I'm very curious. We're actually working on we've been working on it for like a year now, but a render engine comparison video. Oh. So we're comparing Octane, Redshift, V-Ray, Corona, Arnold, Cycles. I don't know if there's any others, but we're comparing all of those. Yeah. And
we're working on it for a year.
We're comparing all of them, trying to figure out what is the fastest engine. That was the goal out of the gate. Like, which is the fastest engine?
There's several questions you should ask yourself, though. It's not the fastest engine. And you're right. You can do like apples to apples comparison. Now, the thing you have to be really careful when you do an apples to apples comparison, because I've been into Render Wars situation for a long time.
I think I've read your blog post about, about unbiased versus biased rendering and how everything is biased. There's like, even the ones that say they're unbiased. Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I was like, yeah, this is going to make this video very hard to do.
Right. So if you do apples to apples, what you have to do is compare exactly the same thing. Technically speaking, every render should give you the exact same pixels.
Yeah, but they don't.
They don't, right?
Not even close.
So, and you can't, if something's like, well, that looks better, it was like, well, then you didn't do an apples to apples comparison, right? You can't do that. It's like, oh, it looks better in cycles. So it's like, well, then it's not apples to apples, because technically speaking, it should look identical to whatever you did, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful about that process. And then timing them is like, well, it was faster, it was slower, but it was better. Like.
Yeah.
So there are several ways to look
at it. Down into like, we did that typical colored room with the balls. That's the global illumination test. Then we're doing a volumetrics test. Then we're doing this test, then this test. And then we're doing a litmus test, which is a scene that we created. It's a museum with like a bunch of artifacts. One of them is metallic. One of them's got marble, so it's got subsurface scattering. Then there's glass. Then there's core sticks, and which we threw everything at it. And then we're like, let's see how it looks in each render engine. And they're all different.
But I can change. I can go to any render. I can go to any render and push one button and make the render times explode.
I know, that's the other thing. But here's the point that I'm going to make in the video is that a lot of people say like, oh, this engine is the fastest when you know what you're doing. And I think that's actually, it's good. Not a service to the user, because it would be like saying the Ferrari is the fastest, but only if you know how to tune the engine to suit just that type of asphalt with this type of rider. It'd be like, well, then it's not the fastest for you because you're not a 10-year veteran expert in the render engine. You're just going to hit go and hope for the best. So actually the default settings matter more than I think people give them credit for.
Oh, okay. You have hit a nerve, my friend. So the problem we actually have is because V-Ray has been around for a long time, and we have a lot of veterans, right?
Yes, yes.
And V-Ray has changed a lot over the time. Mm-hmm. Our default settings are much better than what most veterans are used to. So the veterans think, yes. So the veterans say, like, no, this is the way you need to do it. And sometimes some of them put out tutorials on the web that show people how to do it.
Oh, no, the
wrong
way.
And those are not necessarily the best ways to do things. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times what happens when people say, this is really slow, and we say, wipe everything out and go back to default settings, their render times increase or decrease significantly, because we've actually tuned our defaults and the way we do things to be very, very good. So that's been our problem, has been convincing people to go back
stick to the defaults.
And so there's ways to do that. I mean, honestly speaking, this sounds like a fascinating project. I would love to be an advisor on it or something on that level.
Oh,
or
that'd be great. Yeah, we've actually, I think, been emailing your team already. So we've gotten
good.
Free
so
copy of the renderer, and the developers have been tuning it, etc. So we're doing the default settings, and then we're doing the optimized settings that the developer gives us for each of the engines.
Oh, okay, yeah. Good.
Which might not be the, I mean, for one, not every render engine is on board with the idea. Some of them have just replied and said, this is a dumb idea, it's not going to work, which is fair point. Now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, yeah, this is very hard to compare apples to apples. I see what they're talking about.
Yeah, but I can see it. Like, dude, if you put a video out on the internet, it's like, which renderer is faster? And then you're going to get a lot of clicks.
Yeah, well, I mean, because that's the thing. It's like people say you can't compare engines to engines, and yet everybody has heard in a conversation like, oh, you got to try Redshift. That's so much faster. It's just you click it and it goes. And it's like, so people value speed. They know speed is important and they feel that some engines are faster. And yet apparently you can't do an engine comparison.
Here's another thing that you got to watch for. Sometimes render engines feel faster, but they're not faster.
Okay.
Think of it like a car.
Okay.
It's like it jumps the line really quickly, but to get to the finish line, the other car may actually get there faster. So,
That's a good point. Yeah,
the interactive speed feels faster than the other one does.
Yes.
And that's a comparison that needs to be made as well. And it's a valuable one from the user's point of view because they can see what they're doing. Like,
faster.
I get the idea faster. as opposed to the final image. And so
it's a good point.
How fast you work within the program is actually very valuable as well, right?
Right. So it's like,
because it's not always about
versus
the final image. Your time working in the interactive mode is actually very valuable as well.
It is. Yes. That's actually a good point. We didn't even plan that for the video. I suspected there might be that, but I didn't want to go down the rabbit hole because it was already taking too long. But yeah, the acceleration versus the, you know, in the car analogy, acceleration versus the quarter mile speed versus zero to 60.
The quarter mile time, right?
Yes, exactly. time. Yeah.
Who's jumped off the line faster, right?
You know, and like that's, sometimes that car's like first off the line, but then just gets floored by the other car at the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So,
that's
like,
true.
For example, like we've added in V-Ray 5, we've added a new noise sampling thing that it's actually based on a paper. Misleading. It's called Blue Noise, and it's misleading. It's nothing about the blue channel. It's just called Blue Noise. But basically, the initial samples, you throw the same amount of samples in with blue noise off or blue noise on. Blue noise looks cleaner, even though it has exact same amount of samples. It's just how those samples are distributed. You can get it looks less noisy, perceptually.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Even though it has exactly the same amount of samples.
That's smart. I like that. It actually reminds me, like when I was reading, what's that book? I think it's called Don't Make Me Think by Stephen Kluger. But he's talking about like user interfaces and how feedback is actually in a user satisfaction survey. Feedback is like the number one thing that leads to satisfaction. So it's actually not how long it takes. It's whether when they click something, they see recognition of the click and they can start making decisions for the next thing based on information they start to receive. So for example, people love it when you, rather than an image loading like blank page and then wait 5 minutes and then the image appears, they want to see a grainy version or like a pixelated version, which gradually refines over time, that leads to a much superior user experience.
Satisfaction. Yeah.
Which, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, because you can make a decision like as it's loading and you go, that's not right. Change this. Try it again. That's not right. Versus waiting 5 minutes for those decisions. Yeah.
Nice. Well, cool. We've gone down a rabbit hole a little bit, but this is a great conversation. I think you and I are going to keep talking about this stuff, which is great. I will, like I said, like I've been in the Render Wars debacle, so I've actually have many battle scars from that. And
I bet.
Honestly speaking, like I worked in visual effects and I worked in the movie industry, and like there's so many movies we worked out there where like we're going to try all these render engines. Like seriously, we're doing this again. Like, you know, like it was a problem. So I know the pitfalls of that battle. So I can help you with that.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'll do it in a unbiased way, shall we say.
That's great. Awesome. I mean, there's actually little information out there about render engines and speeds. Yours were the only articles that kept popping up in Google. So I'm like, all right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I do want to talk about Polygon because I know we're running a little long time.
Sure.
So Polygon sounds pretty cool. You gave me a little bit of a synopsis, a little introduction to it. Give me a little bit more in depth as to what Polygon's all about.
Yeah. So basically 5 years ago, the only big texture sites were like textures.com, and that was it. And the problem I realized was that everybody was going there. They downloaded the brick texture and then they took it into Crazy Bump to generate the normals, displacements, maps, etc.
Right.
And it was a lot of fine tuning and all that kind of thing. And then I thought, like, you know, this texture's probably been downloaded 1,000 times. It's probably been put into Crazy Bump similar amount of times. The
Everyone's
collective
done the same
wastage of time is insane. I'm like, this is silly. I should be able to download them all at once. And that was the idea for the site. And of course, it grew from there. And by the time we launched it, and then 3 months later, Megascans launched. And now the space is all PBR, right? Everybody's distributing PBR. So we've now transitioned to, basically our goal is to, what we put it in the shortened version, is to help you make better renders faster through whatever process that is. So we're focusing on things that are very hard to find online done well. So we just did indoor plants, for example, because we heard from ArcViz Studios that there's a lot of plants out there, but most of them suck, which is cool. You bring them in, like, that doesn't look like a plant. I better hide it behind this couch so you can't tell, right?
You so paid like, for it.
Yeah, I know. You already paid for it. And it's like, it sucks. And I was like, that's a good point. So we researched for months, experimenting with all the different methods. We photo scanned them. We tried building them digitally. They all kind of look fake. We eventually realized the best method was like a hybrid approach of scans plus procedural, plus hand tweaking, plus then an extra dirt and gunk layer. Anyways, so we released this pack of plants, which is like, looks outstanding. And they also work in like every render engine and every software, the major ones. So that's kind of our goal. So every month we release a new pack of something. The month after that, we release photo scanned rocks, which we've done the same way, like 16K texture maps, the highest quality detail, all that kind of thing. So we basically have a team of people where we're like, what's a new challenge we can do? Like, now we're working on terrazzo ceramic tile that ArcVis people actually want to use. So like good designs, and also we're using a lot of substance designed things. So we're creating substance files and uploading them as, we call them generators, that basically are capable of exporting tens of thousands of new types of terrazzo, for example.
So you give people a starting point in substance, and then they can make whatever they want from there, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it's like a substance file that just basically does, like we have one for wood. It's like the last wood texture you'll ever download, because it does tens of thousands of different types of wood with the grain and the quarter cut, plank cut, like every little tiny detail we painstakingly built and put into it. So yeah, it's fun. It's like every month we're just like solving a new problem, and a similar business model, I would guess, to Megascans. You pay for a subscription, you get a set number of credits, download stuff, and it's great. It's going well.
Awesome. Well, that's really cool. That's really cool. That's a great resource. So we'll put up a link about Polygon in on our site as well, so that people can go check that out. That would be really cool.
Nice.
Well, listen, Andrew, it's been really great. I can't believe we haven't actually met in person, because you and I sound like we're along the same lines of people.
Sounds so like we've probably been at a few conferences and didn't meet, but yeah.
Nope, I know. Yeah, exactly. So it's really cool meeting you in person, this way, which is probably how we're going to be meeting for a while. And we'll take that for, take it for what it is.
Yeah.
But thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.